Jr., we have another chapter here for you. Today we have my friend Christina just talking about just the insane year that she had last year. I really can't wait for you to hear just her strength through all of this has just been absolutely incredible. So yeah, I also just want to say thank you for all the support on last week's chapter with Sammy. All those messages just really make me happy, and it just reaffirms that what I'm doing is like good. Sometimes like there's like some things that you just do and you're like, okay, cool. If no one hears it, it's fine. And that's kind of how it's been. But, you know, for all the support, it's just been really, really awesome. I also just want to preface that this was recorded around the holidays. So if you hear references to the holidays and times of joy, that's what I'm referring to. But yeah, I'm going to let Christina introduce herself and then we'll hop into the conversation.
Okay. But yeah, so who you are, where you're from, what you're doing.
Like where I'm from, like where I was born.
Like, I mean, it could be wherever you want.
I'm from Tahiti.
I am the Tahitian queen. You may address me as Her Majesty.
Exactly. I'm a descendant from a Samoan king.
Oh my God. I love that journey for you.
I used to get asked if I was Samoan a lot in California.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's so funny. The things that people come up with, I'm like, then I got asked one time if I was Malaysian, which is also was like kind of in that region. And I was like, I don't know what that even means.
But they're really reaching. Wow.
I know. But yeah, Samoan, I would get a good couple of times. And I was just like, sure.
It's like we say they, but we mean like white people. We mean white people.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Like he must be
like no Samoan. Actual Samoans. We're like, are you Samoan? Like you have just like really like exotic look to you.
Oh God, exotic.
I know. I wish I had a dollar for every time someone called me exotic. So then I'd be like, fine, you can call me exotic all you want. I'm gonna take that to Gucci right now.
But that's right.
Like exotic just means you're brown, and I cannot figure out what type.
She says she's speaking truths. I can't. Okay, yes.
All right. So hi, my name is Christina. I'm from LA, but was living for the past 8 years in New York, where I had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Stephen Sharp. And I'm currently living in Arizona for a quick little hiatus. Hope to be back to New York soon.
Tina, how are you?
I'm doing good, actually. Today's a good day. Every day is something different, but today is a good day.
Okay, great. I know just from being friends with you that, you know, you've had quite a year. Yeah, I just want to hear your story and, you know, take it from there.
Sure. It's such a cheery one. yeah, 2020 just really just came at me this year. 2020 was like, here are all the things. It's actually kind of funny. I was thinking about this the other day, which I find it a little bit ironic that when the pandemic started, like I'm thinking like early March to April, you know, like friends had various degrees of reactions. And I feel like a lot of people, like friends or even just people I saw on social, were just like fully freaking out. They were just like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Like, just in like such a state. And I was the one who was always like, it's gonna be fine, guys. We're gonna be fine. Like, I think I even posted a couple times of like, we're being really dramatic right now. We're gonna be okay. Like, I think I was like the poster child for like, get over it. It's gonna be all right. And how ironic it is that 2020 came for me the hardest. But in the midst of that, my father, he was developing a really bad cough, and it was just like a really, really heavy cough, and nothing that my mom was doing was like, it was going away. So, you know, understanding that COVID was around, my mom was like, we need to take him into the doctor. And so they took him to the doctor, and the doctor was like, oh, I think he just has pneumonia. Like, he'll be fine. Like, get him to the hospital now so they can get him on antibiotics. They'll probably release him right away because they're trying to keep the hospitals clear for COVID, and he'll be fine in a couple of days. So they took him into the hospital, and we found out that it actually was not a pneumonia. His cancer had come back and it had gone to his lungs. He had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer last year. And he'd had a surgery. We thought he was on recovery. We thought he was doing well, but you know, like hindsight, we see that he definitely was kind of getting sicker and sicker and sicker, but he was having his blood tested and his levels tested. So we did not know the cancer had come back. And when we found out that the cancer, it had spread to the point where essentially there was nothing that could be done. He was not going to survive. So they, so at that point I got on a plane and I flew here to Arizona, and flying in a pandemic was like, especially at that point in the pandemic, I flew out in the last week of April. That was crazy. It was insane. I was like, whoa. So I flew here and we kind of got like it was a up and down roller coaster. Like one doctor told us that, you know, yes, the cancer's progressed, but we might be able to put him in hospice. He might have up to 3 months. Then another doctor was like, you need to make a decision if we're going to turn off the machines today because he's not going to make it. It was like every day we got a different response. So finally, and at this point, we weren't able to go into the hospital because at this point, COVID was still like very, very, very intense. So we actually had a doctor meet us outside the hospital. She brought her like cart out and like spoke to us and like told us what was going on. And she was like, here's what we're going to do. So the course of action was we were going to start weaning him off the ventilators and see how long he did and if he would make it to hospice. And they did, by the time we did that, the day we did it, we knew there was a chance that he was not going to. They said he's, every time they take him off, he's like, his levels are just dropping. They did test him several times to make sure that it was not in any way COVID. He had several COVID tests. It was not COVID. He absolutely passed away from cancer. He was off the ventilator for 4 hours and then he was gone. So that obviously was not, I mean, it's like, I just, of all things I did not expect to happen this year, that was the thing. Like, I just had no idea that that was going to happen. And so I stayed in Arizona and the plan was to stay here until my job called me back. And it was kind of like, we were working really hard to see if we can shift all of our events to online events. And we were really kind of like, here's our plan. We're ready to go whenever you're ready to go in terms of like whoever made those decisions at that moment. And then they kind of were like, let's just put everything on hold. And so at that point, pretty much the majority of the company, besides obviously the people who were handling the website and keeping things still running, were on furlough. So the plan was, okay, stay here. We're grieving together. When your job comes back, and then we'll figure out what the plan looks like from there. And then in June, they let my whole team go. So everyone was let go from my job, which I loved so, so much. So that was like, just like another blow. But I think at that point, I was still very numb. I was still kind of like, you know, still, it was a month at that point, almost 2 months. So I was just kind of still very much in a daze. So I made the decision to just go to New York, let my apartment go, pack up my stuff and move to Arizona temporarily. And so that's what I did. I went in July. I cleaned out my apartment and packed everything up in 2 weeks in the middle of COVID and then shipped everything back. And now I am in Arizona. So that's my year.
You just went through three major events in a person's life in, you know, the span of what, like, less than 6 months?
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. Like,
yeah, it was essentially everything I had feared come to life really happened. It was, you know, because my dad had been sick for a couple of years. He'd had a number of health issues for a while. So like his health was always something we were concerned about. And it was, you know, and kind of an ongoing thing, but for the most part, he kind of kept coming back. Like we kind of kept saying my dad had nine lives because he would have these things and the doctors would be able to treat it and be like, wow, this is crazy. He's fine now. And so he always bounced back. So like, while it was always in the back of my mind, this like fear of like what life would be like without dad, it just kind of like kept going. And so I kind of felt like, I don't know if it's weird, but it's like, I kind of felt like I had more time, you know, like, oh, you know, things will be more in order when he goes. And that way, like, I'll be able to handle it better. You know, like, you kind of have this like image in your mind that of this is what the situation will be.
Yeah.
And it's really strange because none of those things I thought was going to be in place were in place when my dad passed away. Mm. But I don't know. Like, I guess it's something I've actually never told anyone. I don't know if other people have this, but I kind of felt like, okay, well, I know that my parents are going to go at some point, right? Everyone's parents are going to go at some point, but you kind of think by that time I'll already be married. I'll have kids. I'll have, you know, like, you kind of feel like you'll have your life and that will kind of all be set. And it's kind of like ready for that next chapter. And none of that stuff has happened yet. As far as I know, I'm not married and have not had a child. So I was kind of like, oh, I just didn't think it was going to happen this way. I thought I was going to have these things that were going to kind of keep me going. And then, you know, when it happened, I think everything happened literally. It was like May, June, July. Mm-hmm. Dad passed away in May. I lost my job in June and I moved from New York in July. So it was like, I was in like some survival mode. Like, I've talked to a couple of friends and I'm like, I couldn't tell you what conversations we had in May. I don't remember them. I have like no memory of like that month. Oh. I think it's something you do for survival mode where it's like, you just kind of like have to, like, your body protects itself. Cause I just don't have very much memory of like what I did day to day. So it's like kind of when I read this, like, or not read, and I tell you like this thing that happened, I like, it almost sounds like I'm talking about someone else's life.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how I feel. Like, it's almost like I'm telling you about this movie I watched.
Yeah. It's happened with me before. And I actually was talking to my therapist about this and we were talking about just things that have happened in my past. And I told her, I said, oh yeah, we were talking about my traumatic experience with water. And I told her, I said, it's weird. There are parts of it where I am myself in this memory. And there are parts of it where I feel like I'm kind of like looking at myself from like above or in the scene or like from a different angle. And it's like, I am no psychologist, but it feels like a form of like this disassociation, like that trauma is just so intense that your body is like, well, let's take it from a different perspective.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's kind of what is happening. I think you kind of like have to find some way to survive the trauma you've gone through. And so your body kind of like puts a shield over parts of your memory. Yeah. So I remember the day, I remember everything, but like those days after, I honestly can't remember them.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I experienced that too. Like, and that's actually what prompted me to find a therapist, is that I was on a night out and, you know, there are parts of it that I just did not remember, conversations that I don't remember having. And it freaked me out. I was like, this isn't a good thing. But it was also like, I described it as kind of like trying to like keep my head above water, and like those moments where my memory would fall away, or the times where I felt underneath the surface. And yeah, I feel like in those moments of grief and in these traumatic responses, like the body does kind of go on autopilot and is like, how can I take my body from room to room, like in the shortest distance possible with the least amount of effort? And like storing memory is just not one of them. Like, how do you even begin to process that? Like, have you begun to even process?
I don't know if I fully have, because one thing I didn't think about when dealing with grief is that you're not dealing with it alone. You know, I had my mom to take care of and my brother to take care of. And so I think that a part of me was the one that went into problem solving mode. You know, like, obviously my first concern was to take care of my mom, you know, because as much grief as I'm feeling, like, I can't even imagine what it's like to lose your life partner. You know, your person, you were married for 45 years. Wow. So like to lose that person who's your every day, is such a different, you know, experience. So I think my main goal was to just kind of make sure she was okay and that she was getting from day to day all right. And then my brother, who unfortunately has suffered from mental health problems for many, many, many years, this really brought a lot of it to the surface. So I kind of was in like juggling mode of trying to make sure he was okay and like being available for him and then being available for my mom. So I don't really know if I've fully processed it. I think that right now, not that like to weigh one or the other, I think right now what I'm kind of processing more is the loss of New York and my life in New York, because I think one of the things that I didn't expect to happen was to lose what my life was. Mm-hmm. You know, like I had moved away. I hadn't lived, you know, I actually have never lived in Arizona. My parents moved to Arizona when I moved to New York. So even this house that I'm in right now, I didn't grow up in this house. I don't really have many associations to this house except for coming to visit on holidays. So it was a little bit of everything was new. Everything was brand new. And then I'm trying to kind of handle, you know, what's coming at me. So I don't know if I've processed it. I know I've done a lot of writing. Mm-hmm. I've written out, you know, the experience a lot, which has been very helpful, because I think it's been able to put a name to some of the feelings that I have. Mm-hmm. Because every book I read about grief, or a lot of articles I read about grief, came from grief from two perspectives. It was either the person who had a bad relationship with their father and was grieving the loss of time, you know, the loss of not being able to reconcile that relationship, mm-hmm. or those years that were like missed. Or it was grief from the perspective of like, I have lost my parent, but I already have my family and I have to figure out how to be that person for my family. Like, from a married and like kids, and their parent was a lot older. So I didn't see the perspective that much of like a single person whose parent was still very much a parent in their life. Does that make sense? Like, my dad and I were best friends. And just a couple of weeks before he passed away, I remember calling him, asking him like how to boil something. I think I was trying to. And like, he still was that person who would talk me through that, you know, like that's like where I, you know, where we were in our relationship. It's almost like, you know, sometimes I felt like I was still in that like college age where you don't know how to do anything. And you still like need to call your parent and be like, what's this? So we still very much had that relationship. And it, and even though I'm not in my 20s, I'm far from it. It just was like, it really felt like a loss of my adolescence. Mm-hmm. And I was reading this one book about how like, there's normally these like life things that happen that kind of like, you know, propel you into adulthood, and usually marriage, having your first child, like those are kind of things that like really put adulthood into place for you, which granted is a very like heterocentric way of looking at life. But like, you know, you become an adult when you get married and have a baby and you have a mortgage, and it's like, then you've made it, you know?
Like, great, cool.
Yeah, and I'm like, that just really like work for a lot of people. But like, that was like one of the things that they defined as like how you walk into adulthood. And the other was loss of a parent. And so I finally was like, okay, I now am not only mourning my dad, I'm mourning that childhood. I'm mourning that like safety net. And so I think I went into like business mode a little bit of like, okay, well, let me figure out this, and like having conversations with my mom about the house, and, you know, mom putting the house in my name, and, you know, just kind of like, you're now the person who's the power of attorney for your mom, you know, like those kind of things where it's like, I just didn't have to deal with, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that some of the feeling side of it, in terms of losing my dad, may have been a little bit like might come up later. I think that it was like I had to go into that mode, and then on top of losing New York, and New York felt like very, losing New York felt almost like having a part of my body ripped out of me, which sounds super dramatic, I know, but I think that only people who lived in New York will understand what that means. You know? Yeah. I think if you've had that experience of like New York and know how much it like really just gets into your skin. It just becomes a part of who you are. So losing that, I think, was kind of the thing I had to like figure out even more than what it was like to lose my father. So it's a real like, and I'm sure if we have this conversation 5 years from now, I would love to see like what that will sound like. But I think that is kind of like what I'm processing at the moment still is like, what does life look like for me now?
Do you think it's easier now that you're in this new space that your body is kind of like I think of like a defibrillator and like being shocked back, like completely dead, just shocked back. And you're like, okay, I'm new now.
I think I would have been able to process the loss of my dad differently if I was still in New York, because I am, first of all, I'm an extrovert times 1,000. I think when they like made the term extrovert, they were thinking of me. I recharge with people. I feel my most self with people. And had I been in New York, I know that I would have been able to have those moments where I could have been like, I could have called my circle and at different times they would have come over and we would have, you know, they would have let me cry and we would have watched a movie and we would have talked it out, or we would have sat in our pajamas and ordered way too much sushi and just like, you know, just kind of like sat in it for a little bit.
Yeah.
And that is something I didn't get to do because I didn't want to sit in it too much in front of my mom. And also it's one of those things where it's like, we obviously can talk about it. We talked about it many times. And of course there's times we've cried together, but you know, there's also that like the grief is just as much in her as it is in me. So it's like, I didn't really get to like talk to anyone. I mean, all of my friends, I have to say, I mean, I got so many calls and texts and everyone was there. So I don't feel like I didn't have a support system, but if I had it in person, I think it would have been so different. You know, I could have, and I really feel like I wish I could have shared more about who my dad was, because unfortunately, because my dad's health was not great for so many years, they didn't really get to come to New York and meet all of my people. And that's kind of one of my big things I'm like so sad about, like that they didn't get to meet this family I formed in New York. And so I do kind of feel like if I was still in New York, I would have been able to process that grief a little bit differently.
Yeah.
But what happened is that instead of grief, I got culture shock.
Yeah.
Culture shock is what actually is what I've been dealing with in the last couple of months.
And it crosses paths with the Black Lives Matter movement. That's another layer.
Honey, I didn't even just have all these things happen. I moved to rural Arizona.
Yeah.
Most racially hotbed, political, just all the buzzwords in this year. So I think that, again, it's like, I can't even imagine what still needs to be processed in my head, because it really did feel like it was one thing after another, because yes, like right in the middle of all this happening, Black Lives Matter just really, really became such, I mean, the resurgence of it was just like even scarier than it had been in a couple of years, because, and I guess I say it was scarier for me to know that your neighbors, the people that are living in your neighborhood, are part of that opposition to this movement was something I just had never experienced. You know, and the Trump flags and all of the back the blue signs and just like all that coming at me, when you have to realize, like, I grew up in Los Angeles and the only other city besides New York and LA that I've lived in is San Francisco. So like, I don't know from rural America, you know, and it just was like, it was, when I tell you, like, survival mode just has been the name of the game, that's exactly what it's been. It's just been super survival mode, because I had moments where I was scared to go out, you know. Yeah. Like, there was one day that my mom and I were going to go just like in town to just do some shopping, like we were just gonna go out, and something in us just said, you know what, like, let's not go today, like let's not. And you know, we made some rules for like how to get through this period. And one of the rules in our household was we were going to limit how much news we watch, because, or else we would both just sit and watch the news and just like drop into like, you know, an abyss of sorrow. So we would like maybe do like 15, 20 minutes of news. Then we saw that there was a riot in like kind of really close to the area we were going to go. And so we were just like so thankful that we had this like, you know, protective mode that kicked in that was like, not today. We will not be shopping today. You know?
No, oh my God. So,
yeah, like having all that was another.
Like, like this is just unprecedented.
It was completely unprecedented. I was, you know, and there really hasn't, it's getting better now, but like there wasn't a safe space here to go to, you know. I think I posted about this and I talked to you about it, but you know, my dad and I, one of the things that we had picked up since moving to Arizona was horseback riding. It was something that just was like became a thing that we love to do. We had done it a couple times in California, but here like horses were literally everywhere. So it was like, oh, we can do this so easily. And, you know, it was just a thing that became really special to us. And so when I knew I was moving here, I decided, okay, I'm going to take horseback riding lessons. That'll be like, you know, something like weekly or bi-weekly, however I decided to do it, you know, to kind of like not only help me like feel close to dad, but also just kind of like have something I love to do here. And when I tell you that I go to these stables and I see all the MAGA hats and the conversations that happened around me, and just, I mean, it was just such a culture shock that sometimes I couldn't even really process why I was doing the horse. Like I couldn't even think about the fact that like I decided to do this as a way to like kind of honor and like keep a tradition going with my father. But I couldn't even do that because I was A, concerned for my safety, or B, I'd be concerned for my just sanity, because these people around me were saying things. Sometimes I think they would say them knowing I was there to kind of see how that, you know, you know, I think that people have two sides. I think there's people who are like, yes, I'm trying very hard to just be a good person, and they're talking to their friends and all of their friends are Trump supporters. But it's also like, you know, I'm in the room, you know, like
exactly.
And one of them, when like a fellow writer even flat out like said, after the election and after Biden won, you know, when my trainer asked her how she was feeling, and she was like, oh, I'm good. She's like, oh, I'm just so sick about Trump though. And at this point, she knew my name, we'd already been introduced, and she's like, Christina, I hope you're not a Democrat. And the trainer kind of like chuckled a little bit. And I'm like, I'm sure she knew, which is kind of what she knew. And so I said, yes, I am a Democrat actually. And I'm very happy for the news. And, you know, then we ended up having this whole long discussion, and it just got to the point where I was like, I don't want to have this discussion. This is a space that I created to kind of deal with my feelings, you know, my feelings of my father and like a memory, and also like have this time to, you know, be on this horse and just like not really have to like deal with the world. And it was just so abundantly clear that I would never have that safe space. That was never going to happen for me in this arena, because, and I asked the trainer, I asked her like when we were alone, I said, do you ever train anyone else of color? And she's like, actually, to be honest with you, no. I had one girl one time a couple of years ago, but other than that, no, you would be the only one here that I'm wearing that's of color. And I mean, also if you look around and you see where like in my neighborhood, it's becoming much more mixed, but like when you drive out to the areas where the stables are in out here, you're not going to see people of color. And if you are, you're going to see them, they're going to be more in like a migrant worker type of vein. So that's really like probably the only association of people of color that they have. And there's such a complicated relationship with especially Hispanic workers, being that we are a border town. So like, I mean, I'm going to tell you, it's issue on top of issue on top of issue here that I was just like, I will never be safe. And that's the one thing that came up was immigration. And I actually stopped them. I said, just so you know, I'm also Mexican. I am Black and Mexican. That is my heritage. My father is Mexican and my mom is Black. Mm-hmm. So understand where I feel on that. Like, it's not like, right. Like, say was, let's not get into the immigration issue right now, because trust, I will not agree with you.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, but I'm not going to pay you, you know, $80 a week to sit here and have this experience. Like, I'm just not going to. That's just not what's going to happen here. So
exactly.
You know, it's kind of been one of those things where, like, all the places I've kind of gone for comfort kind of really, it was very clear to me we're not going to exist here.
I imagine it would feel like being almost in like suspended animation and not really, because you can't really just settle down into this place because of all of the anxiety triggers literally surrounding you.
Yes, 100%.
You know, of all the things that you've kind of been going through this year, now we're in the season of joy. And I posted that thing on Instagram about, you know, it being kind of like seemingly forced into the season of joy. Mm-hmm. Like, how has that settled on you with all the things that have happened?
Yeah. Well, there's that saying that I probably never would have understood until I walked through it, about how grief and joy can exist in the same space.
Mm-hmm.
And now I 100% understand that. It's very true that the two can live side by side, because in these moments of everything going around, my mom and I will be in the house and we are watching a movie and we will just like laugh for hours, you know, like we find these like these moments where we're actually really enjoying each other's company. You know, we have gotten very, very, very much into home design, and it's brought us, it's so weird to say, but it really has brought us so much joy. I mean, we had made the decision early on that we were gonna not celebrate Christmas. We were gonna just not try to do all the things that we did because it would be too hard, because Christmas was my dad's season. I mean, I am the way I am because I am my father's daughter. Like, that man loved Christmas more than I think Santa Claus would be like, yo, I'm not that into Christmas. Like, you. Like, that's just how much my dad loved Christmas. So we were like, this is gonna, they'll be too much. We just can't. We'll just, like, you know. And at the time, we were like, had crazy ideas, because in fact, when we talked about it, I thought I was still going back to New York. So my mom was like, maybe I'll just come to New York and stay with you for a couple of days, whatever. So we had, you know, had different views on what it was going to look like. When the moment got here, we actually were like, this is such a great way to honor him, because it's a way to kind of show him, you know, I like to believe he's looking down on us and from above. And it's like, he can look at us and say, oh, you're carrying on what I started. But in doing that though, we kind of were like, hey, let's find ways to make it us, you know, like, let's find ways to make it feel like very much what our new chapter looks like. And my mom, I am also my mother's daughter, and we love a glitter moment and we love a sparkle moment. So we did the tree in like glitter sparkles and it's gold. And we did a whole, like, we just girlified it up, you know? And so getting into that actually did bring us some joy. I mean, there's definitely been moments. There's moments where we're like putting some decorations up and we would get a little teary eyed. The day that I put the lights up outside the house was a trigger moment for me that I did not see coming. Because it was the first time I put up lights myself. My dad always did it. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of that first realization of like, this will always fall on me or my future husband or whatever, you know, like, it's never going to be my dad again. And so that was definitely a day where I had to kind of take a second and like, it just really hit me. But just as fast as that can happen, my mom and I will sit down and we'll watch a ridiculous like Hallmark movie and just basically talk trash about it for 2 hours. It's just like the most sadistic level of joy I can even, like, put into words for you. We will like order some food and pour a glass of wine and put on a Hallmark movie and like just tear to shreds. Like, you would think we have degrees in like film and television. Like, we are just like, well, that's crazy. And that's like, oh, like, could no one pay for a better wardrobe? Like, what's going on? And we would, especially, like, don't get me started on the wigs. Like, why?
No, we're so terrible.
Like, I don't understand. So we just, like, you know, we just kind of have these moments where we're just, like, kind of having fun. You know? And it's almost like it feels like being on a true and real constant emotional roller coaster. I mean, it's like there'll be days where I just, like, feel like this pit in my stomach is never going to go away. And I just want to, like, lock myself in a closet. And then, like, just as quickly, there'll be a day where I'm just, like, walking around the house, like, singing Christmas carols. And, you know, it's just, it's the strangest, like, thing to go through, because you really do are just, like, you're all over the place. But mm-hmm. I think that doing the things that you love do bring joy back to you. And, you know, one of the things I've always loved is to find ways to make things still beautiful, you know? And so, yes, it may be over the top that, and I this is 100% true, but yes, we repainted some of the furniture in our living room a different color because we wanted to do a winter wonderland vibe. So when I tell you that I dragged our TV stand and our bookshelf outside and bought quarts on quarts of paint, that is what I did.
Oh my God.
So, you know, whatever your survival mode is, live in that. Like,
I feel that. And I will say it looks amazing. And I remember seeing that. I was like, oh, wow. Like, she's gone full HGTV yes. on this house. I was like, oh, wow. We are really, really. I was like, we are coping.
granted, I feel like everyone kind of has this a little bit, this, like, especially on the second half of the pandemic, it's like, it's 2020. There's no rules. Do what you want to do.
Wild, wild west out there.
So trust that. Like, I think a little bit, mom and I have definitely adopted that. And it's like, did we have Chipotle 3 days this week? Yeah, we did. Are we going to do it a fourth? It's 2020. We're going to do what we got to do. And that has kind of been, I think, how I've kept a little bit of, like, who I am. But it is definitely a fight. It is a fight, and it's a choice every day. It is like a, like, really having to, like, pull my way out of it. Just the other day, I was in such a bad place. I was just feeling so sad and everything felt hopeless. I just, like, didn't have, I was like, Christmas can just have it. Like, you can go so far away. And it was like, I really had to make the decision to choose to, like, not let everything that happened this year take it away from me. And I just, like, put on my cheesy Christmas music and I just got out another box. We have bought all the twinkle lights in the Maricopa, Arizona area. So there are no more at the stores. So I pulled out one of our 50 boxes that we bought and I put up more lights. And it's just, you know, like, whatever that thing is that gives you some type of, like, comfort right now, I think it's like, you just have to, like, lean all the way in. You can find me on Instagram at GracefullyBrooklyn, which I have clearly not changed my Instagram handle.
I love the commitment to the brand. Arizona is
not the vibe.
No. I love you.
Me too.
If you enjoyed today's chapter, I would encourage you to hit the subscribe button on the listening platform of your choice. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram at Sanctum Podcast and me at Stephen Sharp Jr. Also, if you would like to donate towards the podcast to keep it ad-free, it would be greatly appreciated. There is a link in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you on the next one.
Did I tell you my mom asked me if I was going to get an Arizona driver's license, and I looked at her, and she just asked me if I had two heads. I was like... What? No.
Like, why would you do that? That's insane.
New York driver's license. I'm holding on to that bad boy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Unless it's from France.
Right, exactly. Unless it's like some super cool, like, I don't know, presidential, like, driver's license. If that's even a thing, I don't know. Like, like, whatever Michelle Obama has, that's what I want. Like, I want a Michelle Obama driver license.
I need to know. All right, I need to put this in the podcast. I need to know Michelle Obama or Barack Obama or the children, if you're any of you are listening, I need to know if there's a separate driver's license for the royal. I almost said the royal family.
I'd get that.
For the presidential's family. Oh my.
That's the only other license I will take other than the New York license.
Oh my God. I really do feel that on a spiritual level.